Welcome to Grass Clippings. I'm your host, Crystal Rose Fricker, and today we're joined by BJ Thomas, grounds foreman at the University of Georgia. BJ's journey from college athlete to award-winning field manager is truly inspiring. We'll explore her experiences maintaining elite fields, advice for young professionals, and involvement in the Women in Turfgrass group. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. BJ, congratulations. This is so exciting. What goes into preparing a field to earn that high of an honor?
What a great question. A lot of hard work, blood, sweat, and tears, literally. I think just kind of determination, knowing in advance that that's something you want to do, and making sure day in and day out that you know, you're providing the best playing surface that you possibly can for the student athletes while also keeping it aesthetically pleasing.
So you have a pretty good team that's working with you?
I've got a phenomenal group of guys. I've got two phenomenal bosses that have really taught me kind of everything I know, have taught me the standard that we have here at Georgia. And now it's my responsibility to kind of carry it out to my guys and uphold them to that standard.
What about a mentor? Did you have someone that mentored you in this whole amazing role that you're in today?
I have to say both of my bosses and then a lot of the ladies from the Women in Turf team, I didn't really know about like a Field of the Year award until kind of meeting some of the ladies there and then them telling me a lot more about the Sports Field Managers Association and kind of doing my own research. And I was like, I could try to win a Field of the Year award. And at the time when I first thought about it and heard about it, I was like, all right, like it's a far-fetched dream, but you know what, you got to try it at some point. And then kind of back to both of my bosses, they've just kind of really poured into me. Any question I've ever had, they're both open ears, they're willing to answer my questions and just try to help me learn as best as I can.
Awesome. So team support, good networking. What about, are there any special routines or tools or techniques that you use that would be helpful to someone else managing a softball or baseball field?
I personally, I'm a creature of habit. So for me, it's just doing somewhat of the same thing every single day to kind of fine tune it. I know that this job in this industry, not every single day is the exact same. Not everything is ideally the same, but being able to stick with your ideal practices and ideal ways to do things and just kind of making sure you're doing that every single day, I think is kind of what helps the big picture. You know, everyone always says the little things make the big picture happen. And for me, I feel like that's just kind of living proof here at the University of Georgia.
So attention to detail and having a plan and good routines. I like that. At the peak of your season, you can have quite a few games back to back, I'm hearing. And
yes, ma'am.
That puts a lot more pressure on the field, on your team. How do you handle that?
I'm a avid planner, so that kind of I'm looking at the schedule back in November, December, once it's given to me, and trying to look at how many games in a row we're gonna have and kind of forecasting what an ideal cultivation practice would be for leading up to those, that homestand, if you will, or what can we do post game or post games when we've got some time off. So it's like kind of planning ahead for that. But then once I get into season and into the nitty gritty, I'm thinking, okay, I try to look at least 2 to 3 weeks in advance games wise. So if I need to aerate, I'll aerate. If I need to do a little top dressing, I'll do that. If I need to do a little bit more hand watering in certain areas, you know, I try to put that into our daily routine, just trying to think ahead and see the big picture. But then again, taking back and like, okay, what can I do on the smaller scale to plan for that big picture?
Right. We have a little bit of a similar situation for us, not so much repeat events, but we have, you know, one big event, our field day, and all our customers come out. We have speakers, and it's in June, which is the peak time of year for breeding, and we're starting to harvest, et cetera. But I find that if you do plan ahead and you have systems in place that work, and And then what happens though if there's some malady on your field or something breaks or whatever? How do you pivot and deal with situations like that?
You know, we kind of have to get creative. I'll give you an example. My first season, as I wasn't even the grounds foreman at soccer softball, so this was 2 seasons ago, our irrigation well broke, and that's how we water the outfield, water the infield for games. It broke in January, like January 1st, January 2nd. So you're still in holiday time frame. It's really hard to get people out there to kind of fix it. The well company was telling us it was going to take right around 2-3 weeks to fix. And for me, I was thinking, okay, great. Like, first tournament is May 14th, May 13th, or sorry, February 13th, February 14th. No problem, right? Well, February 12th rolls around. I still don't have water. And it was not really a typical winter for us. Like, we had that cold spell that kind of broke the well, but then it got hot. I was like, okay, what are we going to do? And then I was able to lean on my bosses, Matt Holland and Ethan Kane, and try to figure out a plan for it. We had a 500-gallon water trailer that we would water the outfield with. But prior to that, we were watering the infield in between games with our John Deere spray rig. So 200-gallon tank, I just was kind of driving in circles, letting it go full blast. Wasn't the most ideal situation, but it got the job done. So then once we figured out, okay, that takes a little bit of time to do it, because, you know, you can only go so fast to get a good water in with that. That's when we kind of pivoted to the 500-gallon trailer. And with that, I mean, we're driving tractor and trailer on the field, and you've got fans looking at you like you're crazy of what are they about to do. And we're rolling the hoses out, and I've got 3 or 4 guys helping me while I'm watering. And then during the day, we would take it and we'd have to water the whole outfield. So there was a part on the back where it would kind of spray out perfectly, and you just would drive as slow as you could and let the water spray out. So that's probably the best scenario I've got for you for that one.
Yeah, that's an interesting story. And I bet you the atmosphere during that was a little stressful, but your demeanor and your leadership probably calmed everybody down. Or how do you deal with that? Yeah.
I deal with it more so internally, so I'm not projecting my stress onto others, because I am really good at that. I know that's not something to be good at, but I try to just kind of put myself in like my own little bubble and get my frustration out before barking out orders or having people do things. Like, I try to take some time and think out everything that I need to say or do before I'm barking out random orders to everyone. And if I stress, I just go home and stress and don't sleep all night and wake up the next day and make it work.
That's good advice. I kind of, it's like in running a business, you can't really run off emotions. We're passionate Correct. About what we do, but in those situations, emotions aren't the best. And so we have to think about, well, we're just running a business, and it's what's best for the athletes in your case and your team and what you can get done, and rolling with whatever happens in your environment. I mean, you have That's weather right. events too, probably, that really change things up.
I do. Tarp poles in the middle of games, or deciding to pull the tarp, not to pull the tarp, so we can get a game started. It's a lot of emotions and trying to process those and then trying to articulate them to the powers to be without showing frustration or stress.
Right. What about in between games when you have slow times? Do you guys have any routines for that, or is it just how we can breathe now?
You know, everyone tries to say that, team's away, like, you guys can breathe, you guys can take time off. That's really when we do all of our work. That's kind of like the nitty gritty. It's like right now we've got 2 weeks before the SEC softball tournament, where we don't have any games. So the last 2 days we've spent sodding outfield spots that needed to be sodded and needed to look good for TV. We'll do some aeration. We're going to work on some infield skin work, whether that's leveling out low spots and position spots, really working on our mound, doing our like kind of the minor detail work, really getting back to that and fine tuning all of those things.
Well, that makes sense. It's the behind the scenes work that makes a beautiful field, I think. And the planning, you know, your meticulous planning, I think, is a big key to your success. Well, I just want to understand a little bit more about you and your career path too. Like, How did you get, you know, I think you were an athlete, softball player, and
yes,
now here you are a turf manager. How did that happen?
I think I just kind of fell into the industry on accident. It's a pretty lengthy story, but I'll do my best to shorten it a little. So as a college athlete, played Division II. I've watched Division I softball my entire life and seen how beautiful their fields are. And my mom is a big lawn freak. I like to mow, but I was not able to mow as a kid because she didn't want me to mess up her pattern, whatever her pattern was that she was mowing. And so it just kind of came down to that. It's like, I've seen the details my whole life of how things work. And then being a college athlete and realizing my field was not the best field. Again, it's Division II. So it's like, how could I make it better? So I asked my coach one day, I was like, hey, can I like line the field? She's like, yeah, go for it. I didn't have a string. I didn't have anything. I just kind of never used a chalker, just kind of chalked it. It was not the most straight line. I had no idea how they got straight lines until I got here to Georgia and realized, oh, maybe common sense, pull a string, that line's not going to move. You know, you've got that. Well, then I knew in college I wanted to do something within college athletics. Just being an athlete, like being part of a team, being part of something bigger than myself was something I wanted. I did not want to coach. I didn't want to do anything like that. I kind of thought operations would be something I'd be interested in. And then with that, I didn't really know how to get into it. So I started working out on a facilities team or facilities crew here at Georgia part-time. With that, we were, you know, picking up trash around the stadium, pressure washing the stadiums, whether that's football, baseball, softball, soccer, any of those. I just kind of grinded out with that crew. My boss, Matt Holland, saw me from afar working really hard and just being really dedicated and doing what it took and kind of going over my part-time hours to just make sure I could get some more hours to work. And he came up to me one day and was like, hey, I'd like to talk to you about a job possibility. You know, I've seen you working. I know you work really hard. I just kind of need another person on our crew right now. It's full-time. If this isn't something you want to do, I understand, but I'd love to talk to you about it. I was like, yeah, sure. I said, but I've never lined a field. I've never done anything like that. So I don't have the experience. He's like, I'm not worried about that. I can teach you. If you're willing to learn, like I can teach you everything you need to know. I said, okay. So, you know, he kind of went out on a leap of faith. I feel for me, he again, saw me, talked to a couple people about me, I guess just like my character, my work ethic, and hired me without having any schooling background, technical background about the industry. And with that, like, I've just kind of learned and grown on the job and realized, okay, I'm halfway decent at this. You know, I thought, okay, I'll be here for a year. I'll transition into the operation side of things. And a year went by, year and a half went by, and I started to like it a lot more. I started to be interested in it and realize that the attention to detail, the dirt work, like I still get to be around the sport of softball. I get to be around different sports and I get to be outside. I mean, I love a good suntan just as the next person. So it kind of works out. You know, I joke, I get paid to get tan, but I know that's not really the reality of it. So it's my way to stay connected to the sport that has given me so much my entire life. But then now I can give back to those athletes and again, just kind of give back to my boss and do my best because he took a huge chance on me.
That is a wonderful story. Yeah, Matt Holland is a great, we've worked with him in the past. So fun to work with him and knows his stuff. Obviously, he knows people too to pick you.
He does. He knows people, whether you see it or not at the time. He's very methodical also. I've learned that about him with working with him and working under him is he doesn't just do something on a whim. He's going to think through every situation, every scenario, good and bad, and he's going to do what's best for whether it's the grass or the person or the facility, the venue, whatever it is. He's got everyone's best interest in mind.
That's the sign of a good leader.
Yes.
So you have a master's or working on your master's and balancing that with work. How's that?
Yes, ma'am. So I finished my master's in 2021, I believe. Okay. I did that while working full time. I was lucky. I was able to kind of do it during the COVID era, a little after COVID. So a lot of the classes were still online, which was perfect for me because during the day I could take an hour, take my lunch early, whenever my class was, go to my class, come back and work after, or go to night class, or do whatever schoolwork I needed to do after work. I will say it was very difficult because here at Georgia, 12 hours is considered a full-time master's student. And then obviously on the other end of that, I'm working anywhere from 50 to 60 hours, if not more, a week with soccer, softball, baseball, football, all of those things. I'll say I didn't have much of a life those four semesters. I went to school, I worked, and that was about it. So it was very rewarding to get the degree. I mean, I've never been a big fan of school, never really wanted to get my master's, but then the opportunity presented itself, and I was like, well, it'll help me at some point in my life and in my career. So I was like, I'll just go ahead and do it. And it turned out to be one of the better decisions for me. It taught me a lot more about, you know, myself, my determination, my work ethic, and like my time management skills also.
That's amazing. That's dedication. And I think that speaks to your character too, because just having that experience, that knowledge base, you know, that work ethic to do both things is also a good driver for, I think, where you're going to go in the future, because you just never know what things like that, you know, everything we do adds together into who we are, our knowledge base, our knowledge of people and how to deal with people, our knowledge of plants and how to take care of plants. And so I think you've just been building a wonderful base.
Oh, appreciate that. Thank you.
So I think you've used some of our products, maybe some grass seed from Pure Seed. What have you used and what's been your experience with those?
So we've used Pure Seed Sport. That's honestly all I really know. I don't know any other products minus you guys. And I think with it, from being here time and time again, it's just tried and true. This is not me being a paid actor or anything. It's tried and true. I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly from it. And even the bad and the ugly from it always bounces back to good. In my portfolio for applying for the field of the year, I had to show some of the bad pictures, and I have killed some ryegrass, just leaving a tarp on top of it, all of that. But I was astonished at how quickly it bounces back. And I also was just astonished at how quickly it germinates and then takes root, and how quickly it really just kind of makes that whole big picture happen. We now are the only field at the University of Georgia that still uses Pure Seed and oversees with rye. And I just can't say enough good things about it. I mean, we can put it down in September, November, and sometimes as early as middle of October, and it lasts me all the way through the summer if I needed it to. There was one summer we did hold it all the way through until September, and we overseed it again. It took a beating from the heat, but with enough water, we were able to keep it. And I was like, wow, like, supposed to be a cool season grass, and you like, and it, the product is holding up in 100 degree Georgia heat. Like, there's got to be something to say for that.
Thank you. Yeah, we're our breeding program does a lot of work on trying to have grasses survive in the summer in the heat. We have the research farm in North Carolina, and she can kill ryegrass there pretty easy too, but that's, you know, on purpose. You know, we want to see which ones die and which ones live and recombine the best ones. So we like to have some tough environments like that for a litmus test. Out in Oregon, what we get pressure on perennial ryegrass is rust. So we get the stem rust and crown rust, leaf rust, things like that, that we can breed for resistance to that. But then we also work on drought tolerance and you know, fast establishment, quick germination, some of those things. Perennial ryegrass has that naturally, but then there are some shades, if you will, of differences between varieties on how growthy they get in the beginning, and color and traffic tolerance is something else. We do a lot of study on that. So it's rewarding to me to hear that the product like Pure Sport, which is a blend of ryegrasses, is working well for you and can bounce back from adversity, because that's pretty much the goal of our breeding program.
Also, it's very resilient. I mean, it can take the beating of our tournaments 3 weekends in a row, and that's anywhere from 8 to 10 games in a 3-day time span. Like I said, 3 weeks in a row, and we may or may not have bad wear spots, and they're maybe just minimal. I mean, it obviously, as you know, it all comes down to where everyone stands and where the traffic is, but I can't say enough good things about it.
Well, so that's one thing, you know, the adversity with the grass that you're growing. Have you had any other challenges or adversity that you've had to deal with in your career that you've been able to bounce back, kind of like the grass?
I'd say my first year as the quote-unquote head out at the soccer softball facility, I mean, I've always obviously worked under someone, never had to make the day-to-day decisions, trying to figure out how to grow grass, right? Like I had a boss ahead of me that he grew the grass, I cut the grass, you know, I had no idea. So that first year of trying to figure out, again, I don't have the technical schooling background of any of it. So I'm really in the trenches that first year trying to figure everything out and understand, okay, how much water do I need to give this ryegrass? How much do I need to feed the Bermuda? At what times of the day? How often? All of those things. Like I didn't know those things without asking the questions. I've kind of felt like I was the blind leaving myself the other blind. And that was a tough year for me. I'll say that's when the blood, sweat, and literal tears came out probably every other week and whatnot, just kind of frustrated with not knowing what I didn't know, but I had no idea how to get better at it, minus asking questions. And I kind of felt like I was a burden for some time of always having to ask or always having to second guess myself. At one point, I was just kind of like, you know what? It is what it is. I'm going to have to ask the questions to learn. I'm going to do some research on my own. And I just kind of put my pride aside for that and just really just started asking those questions, asking the questions I didn't know and trying to get the answers. And around that same time, I met the women and turf team and had some awesome people like Sun, Nina, and Sarah to kind of lean on for questions I may not have felt comfortable at the time asking my bosses. I could ask them and they would either give me an answer or help me find an answer, and just kind of instill that confidence back in myself that I didn't have. I think that was probably the most trying time of my career thus far, is trying to understand what I didn't know and how to be better.
I think that's probably something a lot of us struggle with, both men and women. But for myself, I was one of the few women in the entire industry, you know, starting back in the 80s. And, you know, so that's why I kind of asked the question about a mentor, and you bring up the women in turf. I think putting your pride aside or just saying, feeling like it's okay to not know something, but what you've got to do with that is get the answer, because what you do matters and the people you're doing it for matter. And so it's not really about me or you in this case, it's about that.
Right.
And so I, in my career, I'm very appreciative of the people that mentored me. Those were mostly men, but, you mentioned Sun, and are there a few key people that you go to all the time, or it's just, you have such a good network now you can, and or who you're around at the time that you can get answers pretty easily?
So for the longest, it was Sun. Once I met her at Little League, she probably wished she never met me. That first week at, or my first couple of days at Little League, I mean, I was drilling her with questions left and right that either popped up on, you know, day-to-day problems that we had during Little League World Series, or whether it was just a topic the ladies were talking about that I had no idea what they were talking about. And I wanted to, you know, contribute to the conversation somehow, whether that was gaining knowledge from what they were talking about or, you know, having a similar situation that I could kind of converse with them. And it was just, I mean, I just drilled her with questions like left and right. And I had profusely apologized to her for asking so many questions, and luckily she was nice enough and was like, don't worry about it. Like, I appreciate them. And so again, for the longest, it was Sun, because I felt like her and I had very similar paths of, we didn't have a degree in sports turf management. We kind of learned everything on the job. We both played softball. We both thought we wanted to do something with softball for the longest. And here we are, sports turf managers. So kind of, I had that connection with her immediately. And then she just kind of kept telling me, hey, like, expand your network, ask so-and-so, ask so-and-so. They have a little bit more experience in that area than I do. pick their brain, see what they have to say about it. And then we can talk about whatever they said and kind of help you figure out a solution to whatever it may be. So I think the biggest one was Sun. Meeting her was the biggest blessing I could have ever asked for, could have ever had and came upon. I think she's really pushed my drive and helped me be a better sports search manager and gain a little bit more confidence in myself.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think she's having a big impact on a lot of people.
She is.
So I had a thought about that too. What advice would you give another woman coming up in this industry based on what you've been through?
Don't be afraid to like put yourself out there and ask the questions, kind of how you mentioned earlier. You've got to put your pride aside and ask the questions for the answers that you may not know or just things like that. Like if you can, again, put your pride aside and ask the questions and try your best to expand your knowledge and expand your network, I think that's the biggest thing. For me, when I first started this, my network was my bosses, and they have a huge network that I didn't even know existed. They're very good at what they do, and they're not very boastful whatsoever, so they're not going to sit and look at me of, well, I know so-and-so and here, and they know this and this. Like, they're pretty humble about who they are and their network. So for me, it was, well, how do I get a network like that? And then again, meeting Sun and her saying, well, there's this person at this place and this person at this place, like just being willing to ask the questions. And for me, they told me social media is huge network way or a way to network. So me putting myself on social media, I never really did the whole Twitter thing prior to Little League World Series. And from the moment I started tweeting random things of what we were doing day to day and asking and seeing what other people were doing, I mean, that's something else. Like, I mean, I can put something up and somebody can critique me all day long, and that's tough. But at the same time, it's not really caring, you know? Like, I know what I'm doing is the best of my ability, and at the end of the day, that's all I can do. And if somebody online behind a keyboard wants to critique it, they can. It's tough, but at the same time, like, it, I think it helps build you and build your confidence in yourself.
Yeah, that's great. Great advice. I think that just that kind of thought process and being open, you know, being open to others and advice and open to helping others that are asking advice, because now I'm sure you're going to be getting a lot of people asking you things, and that's a responsibility. But I also was kind of wondering, as an athlete, do you feel like that helped you? Or did that make it a little harder to step into this role? And do you encourage other athletes to do something similar?
I think being an athlete helps me understand coaches' demands. You know, some sports field managers who may not have been an athlete don't really understand why a coach is asking for a harder playing surface or a softer playing surface. And for me, I know the why. So it's easier for me to produce that if I know the why, but I'm also that type of individual of, I like to know the purpose behind what I'm doing, whether it directly benefits me or not. It just helps me understand and comprehend the overall goal of what's going on. So I think that that's a big key. Like, you can not necessarily pick your coach's brain, but you've got that better understanding with them if you can just be open with them. And then again, for me being an athlete, like, coaches aren't asking things just to ask, you know, they're trying to better their team. And at the end of the day, I'm there with the, providing the playing surface for their team. So, I just think that that's a big thing. I can't say I've, at least here at the University of Georgia, I haven't seen athletes and I'm like, oh, you need to do this. But, you know, I've got younger friends and whatnot. Like, I like to post my experiences so they can see that, hey, if I can't go play pro or I can't go play college, this is a good way to still be involved with the sport that you've played and grown up with your whole life.
Yeah, I think that's probably another benefit of social media. You know, people in our lives that know us, either personally or through social media, seeing something that sparks them and like, well, maybe I could do that. And then I do think that's another benefit of women in turf, because it brings women from all different genres together, you know, whether it be the equipment with John Deere or Bear or, you know, just university students, just making that connection, because our industry is small and yet it's big. There's a lot of different ways you can have a job in agriculture in general, but now in turf, and use whatever skills you have. I mean, you know, my daughter, Michaela, who is helping set this whole podcast up, is in marketing, and she loves art, but she's worked at the research farm, so she understands plants and varieties. And so just the different, like I said earlier, things that happen in our life, you don't know where you're going to end up, but hopefully you end up somewhere like you have, where you can be successful, be passionate, and make a difference on the field, but also with your team and the other people out there that are, you know, watching you and learning from you as well.
Sure.
So does that knowing that people are learning from you, is that intimidating or is that a positive thing?
It's a little scary, more so because I feel like I don't have all the answers. I feel like I still am searching for a lot of the answers. That's kind of something I've discussed with some of my mentors, of I don't have a whole lot of confidence in myself because I feel I lack the technical background and the schooling background of things, but yet I have confidence in myself that I'm willing to ask the questions. I'm willing to compensate for that. You know, my work ethic, the dedication and determination kind of, in my opinion, makes up for the lack of book knowledge. I feel like it's really hard to, you know, what's the right word? It's really hard to put yourself out there and kind of get that knowledge if you're scared to. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally does. We'd be quiet. Sometimes we'd be quiet and watch and learn. But yes. I think you've proven in this interview that you're not afraid to ask questions, and that your curiosity, your intent on finding the answer, that surpasses that. And so I think you are confident. You're just learning as you go. I can be confident. I can do this. And I think that, you know, your work speaks for itself, and that is now being proven with the accolades that you're getting. So I've been there too. Confidence is an issue that I have. I'm a shy person. So doing a podcast like this isn't my first choice. But on the other hand, I really like visiting one-on-one. And so finding out, you know, what's going on around the world with grass and with people, to me, that's what we need to do. And that's the value of social media too. We can expose others to what goes on behind the scenes in sports field management, because to me, it's not acknowledged enough. Those folks are working so hard to make the athletes and, you know, the TV shots look stunning. And hopefully in the future, there'll be situations where sports field managers get interviewed about the field. And, you know, that is part of the story, not just the athletes. I mean, the athletes are what we love and we watch, and they're famous. They make things happen. But if they didn't have a good playing surface, the whole outcome of the game could change.
No, I agree. Could take a bad hop, or, you know, could twist an ankle or whatever it may be. And like you said, the groundskeepers, the sports field managers, they're really the unsung heroes. You know, they're, like you said, we're here day in, day out, late nights, early mornings, prior to team getting here, after team gets here. You know, you said you'd like to see groundskeepers take interviews post game. That's when all the work starts. So as a groundskeeper, you know, it probably would be tough to be like, I got to stop working, I got to take an interview. But, you know, you'd be happy that you're doing it. But at the same time, it's like, oh, I feel bad I'm not working. Like, let's make this short and sweet, you know?
Yeah, I understand that, because that's the last thing I want to do too. But I am learning in my career, it's important to be an advocate.
Sure.
And by sharing your story, or the story of the field, or how the event went, that is an advocate that opens people's eyes, minds, and attitudes towards grass, which is very important. That's why we do this podcast, because grass is good, grass is positive. But unless we share those stories of where grass comes from, most people have no idea that grass is even grown from seed.
Right.
You know, so just explaining that to the average person, once they start hearing about it, people really kind of want to know. Uh-huh. They want to know how does this golf course look so amazing, or why is this field striping like this? Like, what? How do you do that?
You know? I can't tell you how many times people say, "Well, how do you get the stripes to be dark and like then light?" And then I have to sit and explain it in, you know, small terms so they understand. And I try not to get too technical because I know how that feels when somebody talks very technical to you. You just feel really lost and sometimes just feel stupid. So it's kind of amazing to see like the things that we do day in and day out. I guess you could say we take for granted of having that knowledge that some people don't have. Like you were saying, it sparks a curiosity in them.
Yeah. And as you talk to people, I mean, you have the fans out there watching you too. When your team is out there working on the field, you're actually being seen during the game, but it's like you say, all the work really happens in between. So that's why I think it's important to put things like you're doing on social media. You know, how do we make stripes? Well, today we're doing it. A little video. Right. I mean, videos really capture people's attention. And I just think that's what we've got to do anymore, because we want people to value what we do, why we do it, and the plants behind it. And that's mm-hmm. what's unique. You know, we're not working with widgets or something that can be made on a whim, not a whim, but, you know, made right like that. It's a multiple year process to get to where we are today. Just breeding a variety takes 10 years. Producing the variety takes multiple years with a farmer. Cleaning it, bagging it, shipping it, testing it, marketing it, selling it, and then how do you manage it? You know, so there are a lot of technical pieces actually to what everyone does in the process, and we need each other to be successful. If we don't have a good sports turf manager, our grass won't look as good. So right. I just really want to thank you for all that you're doing, both asking questions, sharing what you're doing in social media, and just the success that you're having. I think you could take pride in that.
Well, I appreciate it.
Continue to do more of that, because we need more of that. And who knows, you know, where you're going to be in the future, but I think you're doing a wonderful job right now. And kudos to you and your team.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, I am very impressed with you, BJ, and glad, you know, I've met you before, but glad that, you know, we got to have a little time to chat a little further. Another question that's popping into my mind as a grass breeder, are there any traits that you specifically want for your field or that you see happening with what you're using or that we could work on for the future?
I can't say you guys need to work on like a wear tolerance. I mean, I feel like the ryegrass is pretty wear tolerant, but I also think it really depends from a softball baseball standpoint. You know, this is something else I've learned, that what our baseball sports field manager did last year when we had grass, what he was doing to help promote his rye and protect his rye is very different than what I'm doing. Not because it's two different variants or anything like that. It's just two different locations. I guess I've never really realized that they may be 2 miles apart, but the different fields, the different size, the different types of athletes that are going and competing and creating traffic on that product is very, very different. You know, I've always gotten so many tips from a baseball guy, realistically, of, well, do this or do this. And, you know, I'm sure you're aware of baseball. They use like turf protectors on their shortstop and second base areas. I don't really have to use that because our players don't stand that far back on the grass. Yes, it creates wear spots, but, you know, an issue that I have is umpire positions with our outfield. Not everyone in baseball has that. So for me, it's like, okay, who can I ask? How can I get creative of, how can I better protect that rye in game? Because that's where it sees the most wear and tear. And then what else can I do for it, you know? So, I mean, again, I don't think that's something that you guys can necessarily work on, because it's not a every year basis. It's definitely like a game by game, wear by wear basis. But you know, for you guys to provide the, it'll take root slash germination in 7 to 14 days. That really can help me on my front end and my planning know, okay, again, I've got this 3 week stretch of home games. I've got to maybe throw a little bit extra seed 2-3 weeks prior to that so I can make it a little thicker, or maybe throw it in between games. Just, you know, just things like that, knowing the ins and outs of your product. I think that that really helps me as a sports field manager and trying to read up and, you know, ask questions. I'll say Kelly Lynch, one of your guys' employees, has been another great person for me to ask questions to at conference. I think the first time I met her last year at conference, I did not really ask her many questions about your guys' products or anything. And then this year I was able to spend probably 30, 45 minutes talking to her about the ryegrass options and then some Bermuda seed that, I don't know, maybe we try 1 year, maybe we try in a small area, see kind of what happens based on some problems that I'm having with other areas. You know, it's just kind of, it's nice to have you guys that I can just have an open conversation with and not feel like you guys are pressuring to sell me or trying to persuade me to go with this product just because it's your guys. Like, it's just nice to have that conversation and know about the product before being pushed to buy it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that totally makes sense, because that's really our goal, is we want to be here to help. If there's questions that we don't know, we'll find the answers. So Kelly will reach out to our breeding team, Dr. Melody Frazier, myself, or Austin Fricker. And then we have a whole team of people under us that can help pull data. We have lots of data. So we like looking at data and evaluating, you know, okay, what is the best variety to go into the blend for this situation? And to me, that's important to understand the needs. And that's why I like having these kinds of conversations, because usually something comes out, you know, like you're talking with Kelly, you're getting the idea, well, what about a seeded Bermuda? What would that look like? And as a researcher, I like to experiment and do trials and see, because usually there's always something we can tweak or something we can do a little better, you know, to make the grass healthier, tougher, perform better. And so that's the benefit of, you know, something like this. So hopefully our listeners will get something out of it and give them some ideas for their career path, or, you know, techniques, contacts, networking, things like that. But the people in our industry are beautiful people. We really have friendly people that love to help. And that's something also a resource to take advantage of. And so we want to help be a conduit of that with my team at Pure Seed and Pure Seed Testing, the breeding company. But Women in Turf is an example of, once you kind of break that barrier of meeting a few people and understanding where they're from, you know, I'm doing some things with Syngenta right now on our research farm that are pretty exciting with new technology, because I went to the Women in Turf reception at the golf course show, for example. Just connecting and talking, you just never know where it's going to, you know, turn your path a little bit and make you a better person and what you do a better person. So I feel like I've learned a lot visiting with you today, BJ. It's been just a pleasure. And is there anything else that you would like to share with our listeners before I close us out?
I just want to say I'm thankful to everyone who's invested in me and taken the time to answer my questions, whether they're big questions, small questions. I'll be honest, I wouldn't be where I am today. I wouldn't have the award that I have today without everyone that's helped me get here and kind of instilled that confidence in me. It still feels surreal to honestly be here on a phone call with you. Again, I heard about you last year from my boss, Matt, and really said, if you can meet her, you need to meet her. She's great. So it's, again, here I am a year later, having a conversation with you, visiting with you, and just hanging out. Like, it, I just never thought I'd be here. Receiving the phone call from the award to, you know, planning the award, I couldn't see myself. If somebody was like, ah, where would you be in 5 years? This isn't where I would have seen myself. And it's an awesome place to be.
Yeah, that's awesome is the word. And I think you need to look to the future, because you're going to do more great things. And the next thing we need to do is we need to get you to come and visit us in Oregon and come see our research farm, or I need to come visit you at your field. You know, that would be a blast too.
Yeah, come down anytime.
Well, I just have a huge thank you to BJ Thomas, the grounds foreman at the University of Georgia, for sharing her inspiring journey with us today. From earning the 2024 SFMA Softball Field of the Year to balancing a master's degree while working full-time, BJ's story is remarkable. Stay tuned for more episodes of Grass Clippings, where we explore the fascinating world of turf grass and the amazing individuals that are behind it. Until next time, may your passion for turf grass inspire greatness.